Newsmark, I'm John Blackstone, CBS News. For months, immigration offices have been busy with illegal immigrants who hope their prayers have been answered. But while the offer of amnesty has brought happiness, it has also brought disappointment, hardship, and fear. The law that offers amnesty to some of those illegally in this country also tries hard to send others back home.
From the point of view of an immigration rights advocate, I think that the law itself was a failure.
Augustin Lao is the director of the Northern Manhattan Committee for Immigrants' Rights in New York.
We are very clear that this kind of legislation is coming from a conservative trend in this country that is including an anti-immigrant sentiment, which is a main element in an attack on minorities, on workers, and an erosion of the civil rights in the country.
You're always going to find a dissent. You're always going to find people that don't like a new law.
Duke Austin is a spokesman for the Immigration and Naturalization Service in Washington, D.C.
People didn't like the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit law. People didn't like prohibition, and people didn't like income tax. So, just saying some people don't like to do it, does that mean the law is unjustified? No, I don't think so at all.
On this edition of Newsmark, the new immigration law, how fares America's latest attempt to control its borders. Our broadcast continues in a minute.
If you're dreaming of success in 1988, start turning those dreams into reality with a subscription to the Wall Street Journal. Every business day, the Journal reports who's news, what's news, and how the news could affect you, your family, your career. If you'd been reading the Journal recently, you would have learned which types of new investments stockbrokers are now promoting for flexibility and safety. How companies are developing successful strategies to help them cope with an uncertain economy. And which employers provide the best benefits for women and working parents. The Wall Street Journal gives you the information you need to turn your dreams into reality. Take advantage of the Journal's great subscription offer. 13 weeks for just $29.75. That's only $29.75 for 13 weeks of the Journal. To order, call toll-free in the continental U.S., 800-228-6600. That's 800-228-6600. The Wall Street Journal, the daily diary of the American dream.
The porous border between the United States and Mexico, a border that to some Americans seems not a barrier at all, but a sieve, letting through more than it holds. But in a nation of immigrants, immigration reform is politically explosive. For years, politicians could not agree on a way to control the borders and also deal with the millions who are already making their homes here illegally. But finally, in November 1986, Congress agreed on a new immigration law, a compromise that on one side allowed amnesty for 3 million illegal immigrants who had been living here since 1981, and on the other side, attempted to stop people from even trying to cross the border illegally by making it impossible to get work. That was accomplished by making it illegal for employers to hire workers who do not have the right papers. But hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of illegal immigrants are still at work. And some employers have discovered the new law gives them new power over illegal immigrants. Those who work with immigrants say the new law has brought more pain than joy.
It clearly is designed to be a very punitive, it's a very mean-spirited law, quite frankly.
Darlene Kalki is the executive director of the Center for Immigrants' Rights, located on Manhattan's Lower East Side.
The legalization was tacked on as a carrot to appease a few people, to make it look balanced, to make it look even-handed. But if you look at an immigration law that has a legalization program, that you have to have been here for more than 5.5 years to even be eligible, you have to document, you know, your continued residency in this country. When you have to have excessive documentation, when you have those kinds of regulations existing under a legalization program, it really says, this law is not designed to benefit and really bring people into the mainstream, but in fact, it's really a punitive measure to keep as many people out.
You say there will be those that will not be legalized by the law. Absolutely.
Duke Austin of the Immigration and Naturalization Service.
Congress knew that. Everyone knew that. And rightfully so, they will be denied the right to work in the United States. Correct. That was the intent of the law. What is their recourse? Their recourse is now, as the law intended, for them to depart the United States.
But for illegal immigrants who brought their dreams to this land of opportunity, who may have risked their lives to get here, this country is now their home. Now that they're here, they will not go back easily, even if they don't qualify for amnesty, even if work is hard to find. Some will stay because they need the money they can earn here. Some will stay because they are too frightened to go back home. War has driven many Central Americans from their homes, primarily people from El Salvador. But most of these refugees didn't even arrive here until after 1982, too late to apply for amnesty under the new Immigration Act. Silvia Rosales is the executive director of the Central American Refugee Center in Washington.
In the case of refugees, there is a slight difference. These are refugees who didn't come out of an option. They were pushed out of their country by terror, by massacres. So they have come here because they have no other option. And therefore, they are always expecting the return. They're always looking forward to the end of the war and to their opportunity to go back.
These Central Americans and other immigrants who don't qualify for the legalization program and who don't go back to their homelands because of fear or uncertainty are what some immigrants' rights groups now call the new underground immigrant population. The new law contains some confusing gray areas. People applying for any job in the United States must now show proof of legal status in this country. But illegals who had their current jobs when the law took effect do not have to show papers to their employers. Confused employers, however, have fired some workers unnecessarily. And now that these workers are out of work, they can't legally get new jobs. Some used forged documents to get work. Those who can't have to find employers who are still willing to hire workers illegally. Since that's riskier than before, the worker now often pays a stiff price for his new job. Immigrants' rights advocate Agustin Lao.
We have cases of people whose salaries has been withheld by the employers in case that they face employee sanctions, supposedly. We have cases of people who has been fired because they don't have a green card and they are American citizens, for example. So, I mean, the situation is pretty hard in terms of discrimination, and we expect that it's going to become worse once many employers discover that this is a tool that they have in order to exercise a different kind of power against workers.
INS spokesman Duke Austin.
Being illegally in any country will cause you problems. And they have put themselves into a position of being exploited. But that isn't brand new. That exploitation did not start November the 6th with the signing of the IRCA bill.
That is true. Undocumented immigrants never had any right in this country.
Silvia Rosales from the Central American Refugee Center.
But before you had, the law had left the opening to any citizen to extend their hand and give and be of any help to an undocumented immigrant without the fear of committing a crime. Now, you, as an American citizen, are going to be afraid of helping me or helping another one who you think might be an undocumented immigrant because you are afraid of commit a crime. So that is what is causing this law. It's legalizing discrimination, abuse it.
Turnout for the legalization program has been generally lower than expected. In New York City, where an estimated 300,000 were expected to apply, only 51,000 actually completed applications. In Chicago, so far, out of an estimated 150,000 expected to apply, only 59,000 have. In the Western region, turnout has been better. Out of an estimated 1.2 million expected, 600,000 have actually applied. The INS blames its own miscalculation for the low turnout, saying it believed a higher number of undocumented people in this country had actually come here before the 1982 cutoff date. Critics of the law consider this miscalculation one of the biggest failures of the INS. Immigrants' rights advocate Agustin Lao.
I don't think that they are very interested in people to get legalization, because this is not what is a priority for the INS. The INS has never been a service agency that is facilitating people to become legal. It's more an enforcement agency, a surveillance kind of apparatus within the American government.
Immigrant groups charge the requirements for legalization are too strict. These include proving you have lived continuously in the United States since January 1, 1982, and that you are out of the country no more than 45 days during any single departure. Here's Darlene Kalki.
Documentation is a serious problem. Imagine yourself if you've had to live in hiding, live under an assumed name, maybe never had an apartment in your name, you were paid off the books, never had any rent receipts in your name, utility bills. Would it be that easy for you to be able to prove that you have been living here continuously for the last 5 years? I think not.
People on all sides of the debate do agree on one thing, that this country was built by immigrants and continues to be. But sharp disagreement remains over how to handle America's newest immigrants. On one hand, Congress and many American citizens believe the time has come to control the borders more strictly. But Latino groups and other advocates for immigrants believe the current law will only help divide American society, will help push illegal immigrants deeper underground. We'll meet some of these immigrants and hear their stories when our Newsmark broadcast continues after this.
If you've been to a new car dealer lately, why do they treat customers like that? All I wanted to do was look around, ask a few questions, talk about pressure. I couldn't wait to get out of there. I mean, whose money is it anyway?
See your Southern California Vantage Buick dealer and get something many dealers won't give you. Respect. No hustle, no pressure. Our salespeople have been on your side of the fence. We know the feeling. We'll listen to your concerns, offer our suggestions, and give you the very best deal we can. We'll also take care of you after the sale with Vantage Buick service, like free road service for one full year. Your first oil and filter change is free, and after the first anniversary of delivery, your Buick will be fully detailed free. The truth is, you'll get courteous, personalized Vantage service for as long as you own your car. Only at your participating Southern California Vantage Buick dealer.
See the exciting redesigned 1988 Buicks at the LA Auto Show now.
I'm John Blackstone, CBS News. The new immigration law. Who does it affect most? In this portion of Newsmark, we'll look into the changing lives of some immigrants. Estimates of the undocumented population run anywhere from 3 to 5 million across the United States. Walking through the streets of any big city, you see them carrying the trash, wiping the windows, moving the crates of fruit into supermarkets. Often, the illegal immigrant is behind the scenes, washing dishes in the kitchens of fancy restaurants, picking the vegetables that we eat for dinner. Whether we see them or not, these undocumented workers are part of this society. But for most of us, their lives remain a mystery. According to government figures, undocumented workers contribute $23 billion a year to the U.S. economy. And while some blame illegal aliens for American unemployment, the General Accounting Office report released in 1984 says undocumented workers do not take jobs from American citizens. To most Americans, the illegal immigrant is more a statistic than a real face. Here's Darlene Kalki of the Center for Immigrants' Rights.
If I had to use one word to describe the life of an undocumented, it's based on fear. You have fear that you are going to be found out by someone who could report you. And it is in the power of absolutely any person to report you to the Immigration and Naturalization Service.
Me doy cuenta de que es duro vivir aquí.
It is hard to live here as a Latino, without papers, as an illegal. Everything is against you. You have to know how to struggle here in order to survive.
That's Jose. He came to New York City in the winter of 1980. He came because as a student in El Salvador, he was involved with the reform movement and received threats from the death squads. On the cold February night when he arrived, Jose saw snowfall for the first time in his life. He slept in a car for 2 weeks until he met other Salvadorans who helped him find a place to live. Jose's first job was at a pizzeria. He washed dishes 11 hours a day. For a six-day week, he was paid $150. 6 months into the job, he ended up in a hospital emergency room when a pot of boiling sauce fell onto his arm. Despite his severe burns, he says he had to report back to work the next week.
Those
were rough moments for me because I realized that here, people don't treat you like an equal human being. For 6 months, I could only work with one arm, but I had no choice because the boss told me, if you don't come and clean these tables, I won't pay you 1 cent. I had to do it, working with only one arm.
Since Jose arrived before 1982, he should be able to qualify for the legalization program. But like many others, his case has some complications. It's hard for Jose to prove how long he's been here. He has no rent receipts because he shared an apartment with 9 other men. He kept no papers regarding his life here because he never had a stable home, a place to keep his belongings. He received letters from his family, but that may not count for much with the INS. There should be medical records from his accident, but he can't remember the exact day it happened. And he says the hospital has not been helpful finding information. So as a last resort, Jose went to a previous employer for a letter to verify that he had been in this country. That man rehired Jose, but he demanded a price for the letter. He asked Jose not only to be his busboy, but also to wash dishes and to tend his garden. 2 extra jobs with no extra pay. Jose refused and was fired, losing his last chance to prove he could qualify for amnesty. Besides, he says, since his wife came here only in 1984, even if he qualified, she could be deported.
The new immigration law came, and I thought it was going to be a great solution for us. But I think that it's had the opposite effect and ruined us all. We've lost all of our morale. It feels awful to have somebody say, okay, you can stay, but not your wife. How can they be doing this in the 20th century?
The city is home to over 500,000 Latinos, and half of these are Mexican. In Alvario Pilsen, you can buy tamales, tacos, like in Mexico City. Mariachi music concerts pack the auditoriums. Since the turn of the century, Mexican immigrants have traveled back and forth between their hometowns and the city streets of Chicago, where they work mostly in the service industry. While travel agencies in the Mexican neighborhoods did report an increase in return flights to Mexico when the law first took effect, these have now dropped off. Thousands of illegals have stayed. According to Francisco Huerta, the City of Chicago Discrimination Task Force, the law has created a new class of undocumented immigrants who are now more vulnerable to employer exploitation than ever before. In legal terms, they're known as grandfathered workers. People without papers who've been allowed to keep the jobs because they've had those jobs since before the new law was passed. But there's a catch. If the worker loses his job, he's barred from getting another one. Pedro is 28 years old. He's been living undocumented in Chicago for over 13 years, doing mostly restaurant work, rarely paid more than the minimum wage. He is applying for legalization under the new law, and he should qualify. But he's suspicious and apprehensive about the whole process. His case hasn't been approved yet, and until it is, he remains fearful about his status.
I'm not asking for anything, you know, but if I get legalized, I'm going to have more rights to do things and to be able to do things better and to have a better job or go to school with no problem, so... That's the only reason I want to stay here.
Even though Pedro is probably one of the lucky ones, he's also a victim of the labor abuses that some believe this new law has brought on.
After the new law came in, they were treated like slaves. They were paying with 2 security numbers, you know, no overtime. They have to, I mean, when you have to stay, they don't ask you to stay. They force you to stay overtime or whatever, but they don't pay you overtime.
Pedro speaks English and has read a little about labor rights. So when he saw this happening at the pizzeria he'd been working at for more than a year and a half, he called Chicago's Discrimination Task Force. When the agency took up the complaints with his employer, Pedro says he started getting harassed at work. It became impossible for him to stay on.
They even told me that if I don't drop charges, that they were going to take care of me. So I had to leave, or I didn't have no other choice. He said, I have family, and he probably do something to my family, so I didn't have no choice but leave.
Pedro was lucky enough to find another job with some friends, where he continues to make a minimum wage while he waits to get his papers in order. But almost all of his friends from the old pizzeria were fired as a result of his complaints. And many who didn't qualify for legalization had to return to Mexico. In the past 6 years, Washington, D.C. has become home to more than 175,000 refugees from El Salvador. From bussing tables to cleaning office buildings in the middle of the night, Salvadorans and other Central Americans have become an integral part of the capital. Most of the Salvadorans in Washington didn't arrive until the war in their homeland intensified, but that was after the 1982 cutoff date for amnesty. Many of them won't be able to apply for the legalization program. For many, it's illegal to stay here, but too dangerous to return home. Nelson and Jose are both former peasant farmers who now survive by washing dishes and cleaning tables.
When we were told to quit our job, they owed us 1 month's pay, a total of 26 days. They used to pay us every 2 weeks, but since they figured that as undocumented people, we couldn't place any demands for our pay, so they pay when they want to, or they just don't.
I've been working in restaurants ever since I arrived. The last place I worked was a diner. I worked there a few months. The boss didn't ask me for papers. But then he told me I had to show him proof. Finally, he said, well, you don't have papers, so you don't have a job. He gave me $400 for 2 months I've been working for him.
Nelson, who came to the United States in 1981, would seem to be a candidate for legalization. But because he went back to El Salvador for 3 months when his mother was seriously ill, he is immediately disqualified. Now his wife is here, and she will soon have a child. And Nelson worries about how he will support the three of them on the $25 a day he makes as a busboy. His employers have not asked him for papers, but if they do, Nelson fears his family will be on the streets with no money to stay here and no money to pay their way back home. Jose, his friend, is young and alone, frightened by his new world. Jose arrived a year and a half ago on the advice of his father. Don't stay in El Salvador, he was told. It's just too dangerous.
When I first got here, it was really difficult. I had no idea how to work in a restaurant. I had no idea what English was. It was rough, and you just want to go home. But then you receive a letter from home saying, oh, your friend so-and-so was killed, and this other one disappeared. So you confront your reality, and you suffer here or there. Those of us without documents came here to suffer.
Our Newsmark broadcast continues after this.
You're listening to the sound of a bygone era, the horse and buggy days, when people with epilepsy had little chance of a normal life. Today, we don't depend on the horse and buggy to get around. But many Americans still cling to outdated ideas about epilepsy, ideas that haven't kept pace with progress.
A progress report on epilepsy.
Better ways of monitoring epilepsy medicines in individual patients have helped make drug therapy more effective and reduce the risk of side effects. Scientific advances like this are successfully challenging those horse and buggy ideas that used to limit what people with epilepsy could do with their lives. Some serious problems remain, but we are making progress.
Epilepsy. Find out where we are today. Call the Epilepsy Foundation of America. 1-800-EFA-1000. Remember the number. 1-800-EFA-1000.
Somos los mojados. Siempre nos gusta la ley.
I'm John Blackstone, CBS News. Songs about crossing the border have existed in the Mexican repertoire for decades. Migration between the two countries has existed since before the turn of the century. In this country, there have been periods of great openness and times of strict exclusion. A time of exclusion has just begun. Immigrants like Alejandro say they're feeling it.
People don't imagine what one suffers. When we come here, we leave ourselves open to all sorts of abuse. We wonder whether we'll make it or not, what might happen on the way up. We expose ourselves to everything. We risk our lives to come.
I think there is this whole issue of our, we've lost control of our borders, we're flooded with new immigrants. First of all, I think that's totally inaccurate. It's a misperception. It is a myth that anyone would come into this country. Everyone would come here if they had a chance. Quite frankly, most people prefer to stay at home.
Darlene Kalki is with the Center for Immigrants' Rights, and what she says may be true. But though many people might prefer to stay home, they come here out of need. Need to escape the crushing poverty. Need to escape war. Thousands of undocumented immigrants from all over the world are likely to continue to look to America as the land of opportunity. Can the new immigration law stop them? Or will the law simply divide us once these immigrants have arrived? Carlos Arango is with the Midwest Coalition in Defense of Immigrants' Rights.
The Constitution can apply for one, for some group and not to the other group. The foreign born has some rights for this simple reason. They live here, they contribute to this society. So if they contribute, they pay taxes. There's no way they don't have rights, even though immigration says so.
Jose, an illegal immigrant, says there is only one right that is important to him, the right to work.
We don't come here to ask for all the benefits Americans have. It's obvious that they should have rights to those benefits. But we just want a chance to work. I've asked many friends, if they were to become citizens, would they ask for welfare if they qualified? They all said, no, that's degrading. We like to work and see money because we earned it. We just ask for equal rights in our work.
If the immigration law has already brought disappointment, even more may lie ahead. The new law has two phases, and even those who have qualified in phase one may lose it all in phase two. They will now have to pass English and civic tests to qualify. And currently, there are not enough educational programs to meet the demand. According to research by the National Association of Latino Elected Officials in Washington, fewer than half the immigrants who have qualified for temporary residency under the first phase will get permanent status during phase two. Yet to be told are hundreds of thousands of individual stories about the new immigration law, stories of joy and stories of sorrow. A word about next week's news, Mark, after this.
Earthquakes kill. Volcanoes kill. Famines kill.
Of the way we do things here, we have procedures and
red tape kills. Red tape keeps victims of disaster from getting relief fast. Red tape allows relief supplies to rot in warehouses. AmeriCares is the international relief organization created to cut through red tape. When the Chernobyl nuclear accident spread radioactivity over Poland, AmeriCares was first with the needed iodide and 500,000 pounds of powdered milk for Polish kids. In earthquake-torn El Salvador, we had antibiotics, blankets, and tents flown in, then unloaded and distributed within 24 hours. Because in times of disaster, time lost means lives lost. Help AmeriCares cut through red tape with your tax-deductible check. Together, we'll get it there. Call 1-800-648-FAST. 1-800-648-FAST.
I'm Rob Armstrong, CBS News. Next week on Newsmark, we look behind the issues of housing the homeless and who will pay.
This week's Newsmark was produced by Maria Hinojoso and Rob Foreman. Assistant producer Evelyn Lee. Senior producer of Newsmark is Norman Morris. Executive producers Joseph Dembo and Dick Reeves. I'm John Blackstone, CBS News.